I'm Brendan Mahoney of Antares Capital, and today on Private Credit Pulse, we are exploring the opportunity in private credit and why investors should be looking at private credit given the current market environment. Private credit has seen significant growth in recent years, attracting many new investors interested in capitalizing on all the benefits the asset class offers. Given the current macroeconomic environment, concerns regarding inflation, and the possibility of a recession in the U.S., as well as issues such as banking instability, is private credit still poised to continue growing? And what's the opportunity when you factor in these considerations? To help us answer these questions, we have asked Vivek Mathew, Antares Head of Asset Management, to join us. Let's delve in.
So Vivek, tell us about the opportunity in private credit right now. Why should investors be looking at it?
Great question, and I think that that's a really important question. And I would say fundamentally, in a time of general market uncertainty, being senior in the capital structure and having a floating rate of interest and earning greater than 10% is an awfully good place to be, right? On an absolute basis, this is true, and on a relative basis as well. So I'll take it a couple of different ways. If you compare this to other fixed income instruments, which are typically fixed rate, private credit is floating rate. And amid real interest rate uncertainty, floating rates of interest are going to dampen price volatility and dampen valuation concerns. So that's good. And then if you compare private credit to equities, both public or private, rates at this current level really do matter. People who play in those markets are obviously very smart and I'm sure will do very good, but they're unlikely to tell you that this vintage for them is going to be amongst their very best. On the private credit side, we actually think this vintage will be amongst our very best over the course of the 26 years that we've been around doing this. And so, of course, we think that losses will rise. We believe you are being more than compensated for what is likely to occur. The technicals are also really favorable to direct lenders at this time. Borrowers are attracted to the marketplace for a greater certainty of execution and more customized solutions. And further, tradable credit markets continue to stall and private credit solutions are being sought more and more often with better economics, terms, and conditions. For example, the spread per unit of leverage is as high as it's been in several years, with leverage coming down, pricing remaining elevated, and having the opportunity to term lend against non-peak EBITDA. So in short, it's a great time to be a lender with capital to deploy on an absolute and relative basis.
Thanks for sharing, Vivek. How do you expect private credit to fare in the wake of recent bank stress?
I think firstly, from a technical standpoint, private credit is likely to be a beneficiary of recent bank stress. From an industry perspective, recent banking turmoil is going to accelerate trends that we've been seeing for a while as bank consolidation and balance sheets continue to delever. Bank regulation and return on equity targets are continuing to make it harder for banks to lend, particularly to mid-sized companies that offer fewer fee opportunities overall for banks. So they're really thinking through how they're sorting out who to lend to, and they simply can't lend to everybody. So with bank stress constraining the ability of banks to lend, you're gonna see private credit taking more and more market share in corporate direct lending in the midsize and larger. For example, according to JP Morgan in 2022, the high yield market and sort of the tradable credit or broadly syndicated loan market volumes were down about 70% to their lowest total since 2010. So that you kind of have from a technical perspective. From an overall economic perspective, it's fair to say that stress that's going to limit credit growth in the system is going to further translate into slower economic activity, and tighter credit's going to raise the odds of a recession, right? So when Goldman reviewed what happened with Silicon Valley Bank, they raised the odds of a recession from 25 to 35%. So, you know, I think that's out there, but the U.S. economy overall has been incredibly resilient. So what does that add up to? So at Antares, we expect a mild recession, a moderate pickup in defaults, but losses to be unlikely to approach the 4% plus that we're picking up in yield over the last year or so. So as we mentioned, this is going to be a great vintage for private credit and for private debt in general. And one of the best performing vintages as the best time to lend is after a dislocation where we continue to find less competition and better terms. And again, if you're worried about bank stress leading to a more negative economic scenario than we might think, well, being first in the capital structure while earning double-digit returns unlevered, call it 15% with modest leverage, is not a bad place to be.
And from your perspective, what impact will recent bank failures have on direct lenders' access to capital?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that it's not something that people think about all the time. But in this environment, we have investors and private equity sponsors digging into this a lot more right now, which makes a ton of sense. In short, We spend a great deal of time thinking about this and consider it a relative strength. But let's talk about general terms, and then we'll kind of get to more specific and maybe use us as an example. So generally, smaller managers are likely to be more adversely impacted given they have less access to capital sources. This reinforces the importance of selecting a manager with scale, strong and diversified relationships across systemically important banks and other larger sophisticated capital providers. There may be new sources of funding that appear, for example, in the secondary market, direct financing from insurance companies and pension funds, innovations such as NAV loans could gain traction if more traditional sources of funding from banks become more limited. So I think that's out there. But in the meantime, you know, I think it's obviously banks are the traditional largest source of capital. And so you've got to really think about that. So we can use some details relevant to Anteris to illustrate some of these points. Anteris's size and extensive experience in direct lending allows for us to have strategic relationships across a very large base of banks. Banks want to lend to us. We are considered the standard in our industry to lend to from a quality standpoint. And so we've got a roster of 30 plus banks that lend to us, most all of which are large multinational banks. We also maintain purposely a very defensive capital structure with a diversified mix of long-dated funding sources, including secured credit facilities, unsecured bonds, and CLOs. We purposely diversify across funding sources to ensure access to capital in a variety of scenarios. Anteris's assets and liabilities are aligned in terms of duration, interest rate, and currency risk. So to avoid mismatch, these are things we think about very carefully. So we have a liquidity committee comprised of many of the senior leaders of the firm that meets regularly to ensure the firm has got liquidity to run our business and meet all our commitments. And some of the key things that we assess when we talk are stress testing overall, concentration limits, corporate ratings, credit default swap spreads. So these are all things we think about. So we don't wish for the type of stress we've experienced in the market. We don't like that that's happening, but we do think our thoughtful approach is going to stand out in times of stress over 26 years of being in the business.
Let's dig into the portfolio. What are you seeing in terms of trends in Anteris's portfolio?
So generally speaking, borrowers continue to perform in line with expectations, and company fundamentals have actually held up pretty well. Performance of a lot of the industries, many industries, continues to be pretty strong, particularly where Anteris by design focuses our core investing strategy on, where it's really non-discretionary, highly defensive industries, such as non-elective healthcare and mission-critical technology. So if you kind of dive a little bit into the software portfolio, as that's obviously been topical, our software portfolio is performing really well in terms of revenue and EBITDA growth. And every portfolio company we've got in this space are making current interest and principal payments. So that's obviously very good. We expect the rate of revenue growth to moderate lower during 2023, and that's fine. And I think it's going to be in line with the broader economy. But we also expect continued strong profitability. So we still like that sector. And then if we look at the Anteris healthcare portfolio, also very, very healthy, relatively low percentage of exposure on the watch list. There's absolutely been wage pressure in this sector, and worker shortages have compressed margins in certain segments. But overall, the healthcare portfolio really benefits from being highly diversified. We've got about 20 subsectors within our healthcare portfolio. So healthcare it's a sector, but it's really a lot of subsectors that can often behave quite differently, right? So overall, we're still seeing year-over-year revenue and EBITDA growth, but it has flattened out in recent quarters. And so as mentioned before, we do expect overall a mild recession and a moderate pickup in defaults. But what the portfolio is giving us in terms of rates, spreads, and fees makes this an overall favorable position to be in.
Let's talk a little bit about deal activity. M&A has been very weak given all the economic uncertainty. Is Anteris expecting a pickup anytime soon?
Yeah, that's a very good question as well. And I'd say is private equity deal volume has obviously been slower, but deal volume remains healthier than I think one may think. Couple reasons for that. One is add-on acquisition continues. So new M&A activity a bit slower, but private equity sponsors continue to execute on their strategy and make add-on acquisitions. And so that if you've got an existing portfolio where you've got existing companies doing these add-on acquisitions, deal volume has actually been stronger than you might think from that perspective. And in addition to that, we talked about this dynamic, but the continued sort of market share increase for direct lending from intended capital markets transactions on both the larger middle market and larger broadly syndicated markets has also led to a source of deal volume that we don't typically have. So that's sort of the general summary of that. And I would also say technicals here look very favorable. According to PitchBook, the private equity industry has over $1 trillion of dry powder as it stands now, and they're looking to take advantage of valuations moderating and overall a bright sort of long-term outlook. And so that's a very valuable technical as we kind of look at the future. So we'll need to see how all this plays out. But we'd say that direct lenders in general are more bullish on an increase in M&A activity in the second quarter of 2023. And we expect M&A issuance to increase in the second quarter, according to a survey taken amongst middle market lenders. So I think that would be the general sentiment.
Thanks, Vivek. Excellent insights, as always. That concludes this segment of Private Credit Pulse. All of us at Antares look forward to bringing our listeners more Antares insights on private credit. So stay tuned for the next Private Credit Pulse.